Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 10 of World Cup 2018 is done. Brian Strauss and I will be talking about that today as part of our podcast coming to you daily from Russia through July 16th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by Fernando Fiore, my Fox Sports colleague and the host of World Cup Tonight, every night during the World Cup. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss from Nizhny Novgorod. Brian, how are you?
I had a better day today. I took a walk. I saw the Monument of Electric Vitamins. I climbed the highest staircase in Russia. And then I came back and watched two really, really good games. The Mexico win over Korea, and then that bonkers nonsense. we're recording this minutes after that ended, and I'm still kind of like banging my head against the wall. That was insane.
Germany, man. Toni Kroos.
He was just a meat sack for the entire game, wasn't he? And then, that was a nice. A lot of late goals in this World Cup, a lot of set piece goals in this World Cup, some drama. I'm verklempt.
I mean, this was not just Germany. This was 10-man Germany after Jerome Boateng was sent off for a second yellow.
And to save its World Cup. 10-man Germany to save its World Cup.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Unbelievable stuff. They theoretically were mathematically alive if they had tied this game, which is what it looked like was going to happen, but they would have been basically out, and now they're not. So you've got a situation now where Germany and Sweden are on 3 points, Mexico on 6 points, and Mexico isn't through yet either. I mean, they're going to have to get a result against Sweden in the final game.
I don't think we can count on Korea to beat Mexico. I mean, sorry, Korea to beat Germany. Sorry. It would take a loss and some goal difference overhaul there, but Mexico is not out of the woods. But at the same time, I am so impressed with their mentality. I am so impressed with their focus. I am so impressed, I wrote this in my little write-up, their ability to not let gamesmanship distract them from the game, which has always been one of the Achilles' heels for Mexico. They're just really professional, really organized, obviously brilliant technically, but they've often been that in the past. But this team has sort of taken the intangibles to another level, and I think they will get the result they need. Maybe it's just a draw, but I think they're going to find a way to get through.
Yeah, I was impressed with Mexico today. I thought they played a different style of game than they played against Germany, which was required. They were going to have more possession of the ball today, and one of the reasons they got the penalty they did in the first half was because they spent a lot of time in Korea's end. And I thought the Koreans, with their mass quantity fouling, were borderline dirty today.
That's what I meant kind of about the gamesmanship, though, is that stuff went on. The referee wasn't as hard on Korea as he could have been. And Mexico didn't retaliate. They didn't lose their heads. We've seen them do this before. And the fact that they maintained their composure, it's just very impressive. And this is a different Mexico team under Osorio. It's a different kind of player. I just remember when I did that story and sitting down with some of these guys and being in the photo shoot with with Chucky and Vela and Chicharito. You know, this is just a I can't explain it. It's just they have a different mentality and a different way of approaching things, and it's impressive, and it's a big reason why they're in the position they're in.
Yeah, by the way, not bad for Sports Illustrated covers to have Chicharito, Vela, and Chucky Lozano on the cover before the World Cup. All three of those guys have scored now for Mexico. And
Harry Kane's got a couple goals as well.
That is true. Mohamed Salah, not so much. I guess he did get a goal.
Let's leave that part out.
But, I really am impressed with Mexico. I think Lozano today I thought was fascinating with how much good defensive work he put in.
I played early in the first half where he came back and backtracked and stopped a sure goal, and I can't remember who it was, but yeah, very impressive, very alert.
You know, and just I feel like Osorio had a game plan for these first two games, and it was a good game plan, and I think it was very well executed by the players, who deserve a ton of credit. And we haven't seen the defensive mistakes or outright screw-ups that we've seen as recently as the Confederations Cup last year from Mexico.
Yeah, and San's goal for Korea was outstanding. I mean, there's not, you know, I mean, it was just a beautiful shot. But this is a Mexican team again, just with balance and guys understand their roles. You've got players like Herrera willing to do the dirty work. You've got players like Chucky willing to come back and defend. Chicharito, you know, they beat Germany, and so it was strange after that game to sort of consider potential criticisms or what could they have done better. But Chicharito could have had a couple goals. He could have been a bit more efficient or a bit more ruthless at the tip of the spear, sort of. And you don't want him in a slump, right? You're going to need him to finish his chances, and he did that today. So he proved that was a one-time thing. He's not in any kind of rut. He's ready and able and willing to finish here and get the goals. And so that finish, again, I think not only is about that moment and that goal, but also in the bigger picture, saying that every one of these guys seems to be plugged in and ready. And that's just not something we've seen from Mexico in the past. In the past, it's been wait for the implosion, you know, wait for the mistake, wait for the meltdown. And it's just hard to see that happening with this team.
Yeah. Very much looking forward to seeing how far they can go in this tournament. Belgium 5, Tunisia 2. And by the way, when did Americans start saying Tunisia? Because that's all I've been hearing on the broadcast lately, and I love all the broadcasters, but it's Tunisia. That's how we say it.
I'm completely baffled by that. I have absolutely nothing. Who is saying that?
Guys that I love, so I'm not going to mention their names.
All right, no, that's disturbing. I feel like I have bugs on me.
But
wait, considering this hotel, I probably do.
But I mean, I thought Belgium was tremendous fun today. I think people should keep in mind Belgium has played now Panama and Tunisia, which aren't exactly heavyweights. But you know, Tunisia actually gave England a pretty good game. This was a wide open game, totally back and forth. 7 goals. Lukaku has 2 of them. Eden Hazard has 2 of them. And yet I still find myself wondering if defensively Belgium might be in some issues when it takes on tougher teams than Tunisia or Panama.
Well, I will see England's tomorrow. I'm going to go see their game against Panama. It's the early game of the World Cup here in Nizhny. I can walk across the river to the stadium. And so, yeah, we'll learn a bit more about, I mean, Panama obviously is going to be like Tunisia, right? They're going to be out to defend desperately. They're good defensively. They're rugged defensively. So it'll be another good test for England to see if they can break down that team and, you know, find ways other than just kind of hopeful balls to Kane to manufacture some goals. And then, yeah, and then we'll see a good European matchup, just to decide the group title between Belgium and England, whenever the hell that game happens. But that'll be it for me in Nizhny. I will be returning to Moscow and to our wall, our podcast wall, on Monday.
Well, maybe we'll get some more cameos. I just had I'm here at the Fox compound, which is basically a couple of shipping containers stacked on top of each other, and all these temporary stairs. And Alexi just walked by. Gus Hiddink appears to be on a conversation. Last night's show was actually pretty fun. Gus Hiddink sang with Fernando on the show.
Awesome.
They sang Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. And I remain in a state where I think all of this is surreal that I'm on a show with Gus Hiddink.
I have known you for so long. Obviously, we knew each other well before we started working together, and now we've worked together for 5 years, and I've never heard you sing.
Yeah.
Maybe before this tournament ends, we will be so desperate for desperate for podcast content that we will scrape the bottom of that barrel.
That's perhaps by design. I'm actually working on a Fox video essay right now in which I am considering semi-singing to the tune of Seven Nation Army, Oh, Chucky Lozano, but not really singing.
Do they do that? Do the Mexican fans do that?
They do that nonstop. I'm kind of sick of it by now, but like, yeah, that's all that they do in the stadium.
That's excellent. I hope Jack White is getting some royalties.
He really should be at this point. I'm literally writing an entire essay about Seven Nation Army and how it's become this soccer anthem, and most of the people around the world who sing it have no idea who the White Stripes are.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I guess that's not surprising. They still call the wave the Mexican wave because they saw it at the '86 World Cup, even though I think it was invented by college football fans.
I think it was the Kingdom. I'm going to start calling it the Kingdom Wave.
The Kingdom Wave. Well, for years and years, when teams came out before a World Cup game, they would march to that excruciating fingernails on a blackboard FIFA anthem that sounded like it was something that would be playing on like a children's carousel at a haunted amusement park in Slovenia, you know? And it was just really, really, really bad. And so I guess I'm not unhappy they replaced it. The Champions League anthem is great. I like the MLS anthem. I think that's a good little piece of music to get you fired up. I always when I used to play, I always used to listen to Husker Du before games with my Walkman. That was what got me ready to play. But it's White Stripes is definitely better than that awful FIFA nonsense.
Well, it's, yes, it's playing.
And they play what's it called? AC/DC. They play Thunderstruck.
Yeah.
You know, during the warm-ups, it's Thunderstruck, and then it's White Stripes, and those are FIFA's Jock James.
I like it. Let's end on that note, man. It's good to talk to you, and we'll check back in tomorrow.
That was a good pun. Note, so we were talking about music. That was good, Greg. You should be on TV.
Audiobooks are a great sidekick for summer activities like hiking, sunbathing on the beach, running, road tripping, enjoying downtime outdoors, and more. Listening is a better way to binge content you love while doing things you love. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet, which lets you fill your summer with more stories like, say, Masters of Modern Soccer, How the World's Best Play the 21st Century Game. That's my new book. It is out. It is about the craft of soccer, position by position. It's available on Audible. Audible helps you listen to more books by letting you switch seamlessly between devices, picking up exactly where you left off. Whether it's on your phone, through your car, from a tablet, or at home on an Amazon Echo, you can get through tons of books, hands and eyes free, while doing almost anything. Audible members get a credit every month, good for any audiobook in our store, regardless of price, and unused credits roll over to the next month. Didn't like your audiobook? You can exchange it, no questions asked. Plus, your books are yours to keep. With Audible, you can go back and re-listen anytime, even if you cancel your membership. Start a 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/football, F-U-T-B-O-L, or text football to 500-500. Once again, you can start a 30-day trial and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/football, F-U-T-B-O-L, or text football to 500-500. You can do it with audiobooks. Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Next up is my interview with Fernando Fiore. Fernando Fiore is a guy I'm really enjoying working with on Fox, and I get to turn the tables now a little bit, and he gets to come on my show. Fernando, thanks so much for joining me.
This is such a pleasure, Grant. You know that I admire you, the way you handle your craft, the way you talk to people, the way your work ethics, but much more than that, I like to be around with people that have a smile on their face all the time. Very difficult, especially at these times and on time. But being around you is a pleasure. It's uplifting, and I certainly love that we can work together day in and day out here in the in this adventure of Russia 2018.
Thank you. It's it has been.
And
a
I don't give easy compliments.
I appreciate that.
Believe me, I've been tough all my life. If I don't have anything to say, if I don't have anything good to say, I don't say it. Usually, that's my motto. I don't like to put people down. So, you know, by the same token, I don't like to give free compliments if they don't deserve it or if I don't really think about it.
Well, thank you. And I'll plug our show, World Cup Tonight. Every night of this World Cup. It's been so much fun to be a part of it. Fernando is hosting the show. It typically comes out on FS1 and then later on Fox, typically on FS1 at 10 p.m. Eastern and typically at midnight Eastern on Fox. Check your local listings per day, though, on that one. And Fernando, I'm going to start with something that my listeners might not totally understand why we call you El Presidente on the show. Why is that?
Well, this is a very easy story to share. Before I joined Fox in 2015, I was working for 25 years in Spanish television. I did a very little time with Telemundo in the beginning, and then I worked 25 years at Univision. When in 1999, we were foreseeing that sports will become entertainment first in many cases, and the sport itself will be something that will be surrounded by this new idea. We decided to create a show that is going to be in Univision every Sunday, an hour show first, and then it was 2 hours, that it will bring not only the statistics, the plays, the highlights, but also the other side of sports, the human side of the players, of the refs, of the coaches, and so on. So we look for a name to the show, and you know, instead of putting the usual names, we put it República Deportiva, the Sports Republic. We were pretending that we were living in a sports republic with everything was good, everything was sports, everything was fun, and that's what we were living, you know. And well, every republic needs a president. So that was as easy as that. It wasn't actually a lot of thought about it, but one of the guys who was doing the promos in the very beginning, they said, hey, Fernando, this is a sports republic, Republica. So we need a president. I said, okay. And I was the host of the show. So, okay, let's. Then the second part, Grant, is that many times you put a nickname to a person and it doesn't stick.
Right.
You know, you're trying, you know. You know, they put you the greatest, or they put you whatever name you can pick up, and they don't stick with the people. 2 days after the very first promo, called me the Presidente, I went to Miami Beach. I will never forget. I went to Miami Beach. I was trying to get a table at a famous restaurant, and the maitre d' goes, "Oh, El Presidente is here. Here, you have a table." And say, how this guy already, you know and adopted the nickname. So that was it. They stick. Everybody called me the Presidente, and it's been until now.
Awesome. Great story.
It's easy story. True story. That's the way it is.
And what kind of a style did you develop over that many years that you were on República Deportiva about how you wanted to approach what you do?
Well, that's way before República Deportiva.
Okay.
I started in television in 1988. I moved from Argentina in 1980. Back in 1989, 90, I was watching all the sports segments on the local newscasts. I was watching the sports shows. And to tell you the truth, everything was very serious. And I used to live in New York, and I was a news anchor in New York at one time in 1989. And this is how it sounded many times, the sports segment in our newscast. Hello, the Knicks won today by 2. It was a great game. Mind you, in the first segment of the same newscast, when the newscast was delivered, they would say, hello, 2 people were dead today in Brooklyn. So I was thinking, wow, so 2 people dead in Brooklyn sound exactly the same as the Knicks beating the Lakers, which will be so much fun, and for the fans, it will be incredible. So you can feel so sorry for the two people there in Brooklyn, but at the same time, it's the same tone of the people that were crazy about the Knicks beating
right,
the Lakers.
Right, right.
So I said, it had to be some other way. So like I said, I was working on Spanish television. Spanish television was, you know, fairly new at that time, although they were running for many years. But so I started to say, listen, I'm going to do sports in a different way. And I was crazy enough to take the risk, and the producer didn't know what to do with me, basically. I remember one of the first telecasts I was into the newscast, and it was the Tour de France, and I came in riding a bicycle into the set. Nobody knew, not the producers, the anchors, nobody knew. Said, what is Fernando? Segment 3, 2, 1, the sports segment. What is he? 3, 2, 1, hello. And I was riding the bike. It could go either way. It could go like the people who say, this guy is completely nuts and turn off. Or, oh, this guy had something there.
Yeah.
And a stick. And, well, I don't want to say that, you know, that I was a visionary, but, you know, I have to say that I told you so, because entertainment, sports entertainment was, you know, going up every single day. And now you see every single sports show, it had to be some fun, it had to be some, you know, something interesting, some comedy, some. So for me, it was great.
Yeah. I'm curious to know also.
And I respect all the other colleagues who do serious stuff.
Sure, sure, sure.
And actually, I don't understand how many of my colleagues can remember every single name of every single baseball player and the statistics. Right. When I listened to the radio and I said, the guy's talking about, you know, the third base from the Anaheim, I said, how do you know the name of this guy? How do you know how much he battles? You know, the batting, you know, percentage. I said, oh, these guys are fantastic, but that's not me. You know, some people can do one thing, some people can do the other thing.
Yeah. I'm curious to know also, though, working in English, which is what you're doing during this World Cup for Fox, how is that for you, and is it different than working in Spanish?
Definitely is different. When I was a little kid, I hated to learn a new language. I never thought that I was going to use English in any part of my life. I didn't have a good experience in the school that I went when I was 10 years old. I was bullied sometimes from the other kids because we were not from the same school. We were taking English classes in an academy that it was not my regular friends. So I never liked the English as a language. But then when I came to US, I said, well, I need to learn. I went to Montclair State College at that time, and I took the classes. But then all my life I was surrounded by Spanish people, and I worked in Spanish all my life. I was working in very odd jobs the first 8 years of my life in New York and Miami, and then you know, everything was around Spanish speaking people, and my surroundings, my neighbors, my neighborhood, my jobs. So when this opportunity came in, I said, well, I'm probably going to sound like Sofia Vergara in Modern Family, but she acts the accent. I don't. This is it. This is the way I talk. And I know my limitations. I know this is the first thing you have to know when you are a broadcaster. You know, you have to know your limitations, and you try to minimize the mistakes, and you try to compensate with another qualities. And I never asked for the crossover from the Spanish TV to the general market. I never dreamed of doing it. So for me, it was a completely, you know, surprise. And I'm doing the best I can, and I'm trying to be the best in my craft. But it is different. It is different. After you work 25 years in Spanish, your chip in your brain, you know, it's in a little short circuit sometimes.
Well, it's been a total pleasure working with you in English. Maybe someday we'll get to work in Spanish together.
Eso sería muy bueno.
Actually, we sort of do. Spanish definitely creeps into our conversations in meetings here. Yeah. Last night on the show, all four of us could have done that show with Moises Munoz and Gus Hiddink in Spanish if we had wanted to and had the rights to do so.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. So, yeah, I for me it was a big change. It was a big change, and I tried to adapt from the beginning. Then, like I say, I tried to compensate with another qualities that many people probably or risk that people don't take when they're, you know, when they're in TV. And that was my signature, and well, it seems to work because Fox is pleased. The sponsors are pleased, and the fans are pleased. So, hey. Yeah.
You mentioned Sofia Vergara. I don't know if all of my listeners know your story sort of with her.
Yeah, well, actually, her story started with me. that was work-wise. Sofia Vergara, you know, super famous in the English market, in the general market, with a Modern Family for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. But she started with us in 1995. I was about to start a sports entertainment show mm-hmm. in 1995, which was, in my opinion, a brilliant idea. I was going to drive a motorhome around the United States, going to see different events. Could it be a big event like a Super Bowl or a small event like a little baseball tournament of kids mm-hmm. in Arkansas? That was the idea of the show. I was driving a motorhome around the country and bring those to the fans. Then all of a sudden, they have to include Sofia Vergara. The motorhome didn't work because I don't think that would be going so well. So we changed the format. And instead of doing just a sports show, we did a traveling show. We changed it to traveling show. And we spent 4 years going around the world, literally bringing unusual people, unusual stories from around the world. It was in Spanish. It was a huge success. It was way, way, way before Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
And it was a different approach. Anthony, rest in peace, great, great journalist. He was doing it more towards the food, obviously, in the beginning, and then mm-hmm. he went for cultural stuff. We were more into the entertainment comedy, and some things that were unusual yeah. around the world, and especially finding Spanish people living in Egypt or in Hawaii doing mm-hmm. odd things. It was a great show. It was called Fuera de Serie, or Out of This World, Out of the League, and it worked really well for 4 years. We went around the world. We have an incredible experience, but then they decided that for the two of us, we were doing only a half an hour show a week, and they thought that it would be more valuable for Univision to use us in different shows. Hmm. So they pay us the same, but we do more work, basically. So she got her show, I got my show, República Deportiva, and that's why we stopped recording that particular show, but it was a great experience.
Would you have predicted that she would go on to do what she's done?
You can't say that we were predicting that. We were always thinking that she was like a little angel, that everything was coming to her. Huh. This was kind of there are a lot of beautiful girls on TV, and she was one of them. But she got some special thing that the things were coming to her. She didn't look for it. She wasn't mm-hmm. the kind of person that she was trying to, you know, to go up in the corporate ladder and looking for the next gig. And looking,
yeah.
She was comfortable with what she was doing. She's a great person. She was taking care of her family. And then the things were coming to her. And then you say, well, things might go well for her, of course. But it did much more than we can expect it to be one of the top gross, you know, entertainer in the whole wide world, making millions and millions, and still being the same person, and we're still friends, and we still talk to each other every now and then. No, we didn't predict that, no.
Amazing.
Great story, though.
Yeah. When people watch your show, they see that you have a lot of props.
Yeah.
How many suitcases full of props do you bring to a tournament like
this?
Yeah,
this was kind of difficult. I always wanted to have a memento and keep memorabilia with me since the very first trip. And like I said, I was fortunate enough to be around the world. So, you know, usually when you travel, even if you do 1 week vacation a year, you bring a little key ring from Italy, a little paint that mm-hmm. you buy in the streets of Paris. So people do that. So I'm doing exactly that. The difference is that I've been traveling around the world for so many years, every single week. So the same thing happened with the big events. I wanted to keep my original Super Bowl pin of 1989, and I still have it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to keep, you know, my scarf from 2002, World Cup in Korea, or the ticket stub from my very first game of the Cosmos mm-hmm. In 1980 when Beckenbauer was playing there. So I keep all those things. And then when you go to the World Cup, you bring one big suitcase, another carry-on, another backpack full of different things. And I think that the people, like that because they say, oh my God, I remember that particular mascot, or I remember that game that he was the, or I remember that scarf when it was famous, or the, you know, those things. And so you get close to the people. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the game. I'm a fan of the sport before anything.
Yeah, I want to communicate just how impressed I am being around you every day here to see how hard you work, because we have shows every day,
right.
And this is we shoot the show very late, to the point where it's almost early,
right?
Here in Moscow, and yet after we finish recording this, you're going to literally go to a game here in Moscow that you don't have to go to. Like, this is something that you want to do.
That's it. This is I would rather go to see a game in the stadium any day rather than watch it on TV. And if you have a luxury and the chance to do it. And this is exactly what any fan will do. If you ask 3 million fans that are watching the World Cup right now, and it says, hey, will you go to the stadium to see, I don't know, Belgium, Senegal, or you will watch it on TV? They will go. It doesn't matter if it's Belgium, Senegal, or if it's Germany, Argentina, or Brazil, Mexico. You want to see the games on the stadium. That's what we all love to do, and you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to do it. So I do that, even if I'm tired, even if you sleep 3 hours less than that you need. But this is the name of the game.
What so far? We're recording this on the 23rd, on Saturday. In this World Cup, what sort of impressions do you have of it?
Well, first of all, I think that I'm happy that not even one single game ended in 0-0.
Right.
That's something that is always good. I always look at that because I love to have at least one goal a game, something that it will give a special note to talk about on that particular game. That's a given. Then it was only one red card so far in the whole game. That might be some, you know, suggestion from above FIFA to the referees to try to keep all the players on the pitch. But even though it's a lot of drama, I think that it's a World Cup that it keeps you glued to the TV because of that. Because something might happen, and not necessarily just a good play or a goal, but something might happen on the pitch that you didn't expect. So all in all, I think that it's not the most brilliant soccer I've seen in my life. Obviously, over the years, the whole tactics and the whole physical of the game changes so much that when you reach my age, that is over, it's over 30, no, over 40, no, over 50. Yeah, when you reach my age, over 50, then you saw so much football or soccer in your life, then you start to compare. And usually they say that if I watch, you know, like last night I watched the video of Kempes doing a goal in 1978, it was a completely different football than it is today. And back then, somehow for me, it was more lyric. It was more, there weren't so many tackles in the the area when the corner kicks were coming. I don't remember when I was a kid to see that, to see that many, you know, tangling in the area. That's something that it came up about maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the referees didn't know how to stop it. The FIFA didn't know how to stop it from the beginning. And now we see that every corner, there is a problem.
Yeah.
And until they do something, we're going to keep doing that. So coming back to your question, I think it's an interesting World Cup so far in terms of drama, in terms of stories, not only the pitch but outside. Something like what happened to Messi, that we're talking so much about the pressure he has. Something like Neymar crying after winning one game, because these are young people that they're having so much in their hands sometimes that is not only whatever happened on the pitch, is what happened when the game finishes. And you see Neymar crying and you say, what is he crying? It's just a victory in a stage group. But it was so many things around Neymar during the week that he exploded and he started to cry. You see Chicharito crying at the end of the game. Yeah, they beat Germany, but it's in a stage group. You didn't win a World Cup yet, but it's getting more emotional. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you wouldn't see that emotion necessarily in a group stage of a Champions League game. And
no, a World Cup is a different story.
World Cup is just a different deal. And to me, that suggests that the World Cup still really matters.
Of course. Of course. What are you talking about? Who doubted that? No, the World Cup is every 4 years. You're looking forward. As soon as the World Cup starts, you say, "Oh, please go slow, go slow. Don't go so fast." Because all of a sudden, now we are, over 20 games, and you say, "Oh my God, it's gonna be over soon." No, of course matters. The World Cup is something that, since you're a kid, you are waiting for that to come, and many people always suggested, "Oh, the World Cup should be every 2 years," so we got a chance. Unfortunately, now that they decided to make 48 teams, I think it's gonna dilute a little bit that expectation, because the qualification, for example, they're gonna have the same weight.
Right.
I mean, a lot of teams will go. Actually, if you ask me now, come to think of it, if you want to make more money, instead of making 48 teams, I will do 24 teams every 2 years.
Huh?
I would rather see the FIFA making more money every 2 years than making more money in one tournament, adding more and more teams. Because now it's 48. What, they're gonna go higher in the near future to get more stadiums, more money, more tickets, more revenue, more broadcasting? Make it every 2 years. Make it every 2 years with 24 teams.
Interesting.
That would be my ideal.
If you ran FIFA.
If I were the presidente of FIFA.
We're wrapping up here. Really appreciate you taking this much time. Early on in our stay here in Russia, North America, USA, Mexico, Canada was given the right to host World Cup 26. I see how much energy you have around here covering this tournament. So I feel very certain you're going to be covering World Cup 26 and beyond. What did that mean to you? I saw the video of the moment when you found out.
Grant, I always tell the story. Back in 2010, when they were announcing the next two World Cups, that it will be eventually 18 and 22, United States was running for the 2022, and we had probably the greatest chance, even though there were more countries looking to host the event. We have a lot of advantages. Back then, in 2010, we already have the stadiums, we already have the hotels, we already have the transportation, everything was ready set up. So we were all thinking that U.S. will be assigned to host the 2022. I remember back then in Univision, they said, well, we're going to cover it over, the transmission from Switzerland with TV. I said, no. I need to go there, because this is going to be the moment that they're going to say USA, and I want to be present at that time.
Yeah.
To make the long story short, they didn't want to sell me. I said, well, give me some vacation time. I will pay my own ticket. I will pay, because that's another thing that I always did in my life. I wasn't expected all the time of my company to pay me to go to these events, because sometimes they are not interested in covering. But that's why I love them, and that's why I will go on my own. I was going on my own to many tournaments, to many games, to many events. So that was one of the occasions I remember vividly. I said to my bosses, I said, listen, that's okay. Give me 2 week vacation. I'm going to Switzerland. I want to be present. So I have a high expectation.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the U.S. Of host again. I thought it's going to be the first time around we didn't have a league. So it was a great thing to give us power and give us the momentum to create the league 2 years later after 1994. 2022, it would be a perfect time to solidify all the kids that are playing soccer, and they have the tournament right there in the backyard.
Yeah.
So again, I went to Switzerland, and I was expecting Mr. Sepp Blatter to open the envelope. It was a different situation than this one, that there was a vote. At that time, they were opening the envelope, and the name of USA came up. And unfortunately, it came Russia in 2018 and Qatar in 2022.
Yeah.
I was devastated, along with many people.
Yeah.
But I was really sad about it. And I was waiting this long, 8 years, to finally hear from the president of FIFA that we will have the one in 2026. It's going to be phenomenal. I was very emotional because I wasn't 100% sure that it's going to work our way again, because so many political stances around the world. And then when they said Canada, Mexico, and United States are awarded with a World Cup, I felt very emotional, like Neymar, like Chicharito. I was crying a lot. I couldn't believe it. And I'm glad. And you know, I've been in the United States since 1980. I saw the folded of the league. Grant, I never heard that in any place in the world the whole league was shut down.
Yeah.
For me, it was unreal in 1993, 84. Then, when you get a new league and you get a new perspective, you need big events to make them stay, to make it you know, strong. So I want football or soccer succeed in the United States and go step up to the plate to the next level, and I think the World Cup will do that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. If this World Cup is about emotion in many ways to this point, I just I think it's great because that's a great match with you, and I see this every day, the joy that you have for what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
And I think it's pretty great. I'm looking forward to doing.
It's genuine. It's exactly the famous saying in English: "What you see is what you get." And I don't want to change. You know, I always say that when you have when doing this kind of jobs, you are, you know, you people will like it, people might not, people are indifferent. If I have between, I would say, 75-80% people that they like what I'm doing and 20-25% of people that hate what I'm doing, I think I'm in the right track. And this is exactly what happens to me, you know, day in and day out. It's funny because I always respond in social media. And oh, by the way, at Fernando Fiore. if you want to write to me to Twitter and Fiore Oficial in Instagram. It's funny because many times I respond to the people that, you know, that make a nasty comment, and I try to put my point and I say, listen, you know, you think different than me. That doesn't mean that, you know, that you are wrong or I'm right or vice versa. And you know what is the funny part? That many times the same people then respond to me and say, oh no, Fernando, we love you. We just say something bad about you because we notice that you only respond to the people that say bad things about you. So I said, God, man, this social media is crazy. So then after that, it happens to me about, I would say, 5-6 years ago. Then I start to respond also to the people who said, oh, you are great. Oh, we love you. You are the GOAT. I respond to them because I said, God, they deserve also. So now I'm trying to respond to every single person, and it's so difficult. It's so much time consuming.
Right.
But I love it. When I started on television, way before you were born, Mr. Grant, we had to wait for letters, send him in the email from the viewers to let you know if you were doing something right or something wrong. So maybe it was 3-4 weeks down the road. You know, you make a show or an event, a World Cup in 1994, and then you will have, like, by December, you will get all the letters of the fans. They will tell you, oh, we love the coverage of, because the people, you know, were taking so long to write a letter, to get the envelope, look for the address where to send it to Univision, get the stamp, go to the post office. So it was so delayed that by the time, and then if you want to respond to them, it was another task. Now it's immediate. Now everything is right there. You finish saying a sentence on TV, and there are 100 people telling you something about it in social media. So it's a different game.
Well, the show is World Cup Tonight. You can find it usually at 10 p.m. Eastern on FS1 every night of the tournament, even the off days, and also at usually midnight ET on Fox. Check your local listings. Fernando Fiore, thanks so much for joining me.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss and Fernando Fiore, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.